Welcome back to Innovation. I'm Kara Hetland, broadcasting from the Kirby Family Studios in Sioux Falls. And we're going to take some time for the rest of the hour today to talk with one of the four finalists for the $1 million Sanford Lorraine Cross Award. This award is being presented in December, and we're going to get to know all of the nominees on Innovation. And we begin today with Brian Casper. He's an innovator in the field of gene replacement technology, taking a cloned intact gene and delivering it to patients who have diseases stemming from a missing or mutated gene, and he's especially focusing on spinal muscular atrophy. Brian Casper joins me now. Thanks so much for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me.
And congratulations on being a finalist for this award.
And thank you. You know, it's a true honor and privilege here.
So take me back to what, 2004, I think, is when you first started. And we have the rest of the hour to have this conversation, so I really want to get to know your research and what you're doing in the lab. But take me back to 2004 when this all began.
Well, thanks once again for having me. And this is a great story to share. And again, we're really honored that Sanford has chosen me as one of the finalists here for the Lorraine Cross Award. I started my academic career as an independent laboratory at Nationwide Children's Hospital and the Ohio State University back in 2004. And I had a tremendous amount of experience in gene replacement technologies and utilizing viruses to try to deliver into the brain and spinal cord. And really where the field sat prior to 2004 was to get into the brain, we would have to drill a hole into the skull and drop needles down into the brain to deliver a therapy. And simply put, when one thinks about diseases like Lou Gehrig's disease or what we'll talk about, spinal muscular atrophy, this would require, you know, hundreds if not thousands of injections. And simply put, from a translational perspective, to treat these diseases, simply put, that was not translationally relevant and would be next to impossible to really take forward to patients, where the brain has evolved over time to protect itself from things getting inside of it. Mm-hmm. But when there's a problem that happens in these diseases, we would have to drill the holes and drop needles. So we sought to start some studies to try to find less invasive or non-invasive ways to deliver a therapy into the brain and spinal cord. And really in 2007, a fellow within the laboratory, Dr. Faust, started on a project, a bold project, to find a virus or a gene therapy that could cross the blood-brain barrier. And really in 2007 to 2008, we made a discovery and found one of the hundreds, if not thousands, of these viruses. One of them did something that we had really never seen in the laboratory before, and that is an AAV number 9. I call it flavor number 9, and again, there's hundreds and thousands of these that exist. But AAV serotype number 9 had this remarkable capacity, and it crossed the blood-brain barrier. So essentially, I'll walk you through briefly. We took this virus, we encoded a green gene on the inside so we could track where it went. And what Dr. Faust did was to put these viruses into the bloodstream, and a couple weeks later, he took the brains and the spinal cords and sectioned them, and we looked. And lo and behold, AAV9 had this capacity that it crossed the blood-brain barrier, targeted cells throughout the brain and spinal cord at these unprecedented levels. No one had seen this within the field. And it was our eureka moment on the aspect that we were doing something that really opened up the gates, so to speak, to delivering efficiently into the brain and spinal cord. And we were struck by the aspect that over 90% of spinal motor neurons, the cells that regulate our ability to walk, our ability to talk, our ability to breathe, essential towards to life, we were targeting these cells extremely efficiently. And that really opened up the gate to think about diseases affecting the motor neurons in diseases like spinal muscular atrophy.
So then you're able, so you discovered that you can break through, but then how do you, I mean, and then you needed to find the gene then that impacted the diseases?
So that, great question. And how we thought about this was we were targeting cells that were involved and the main cells that were involved in this pediatric neuromuscular disease called spinal muscular atrophy. And actually, scientists had discovered the exact gene or gene defect in this disease. And this gene in spinal muscular atrophy is called the survival motor neuron gene, or the SMN1 gene. And all patients with spinal muscular atrophy have this genetic defect on the aspect that the patients don't produce enough of this protein. So that really showed us that we could target the cells that needed to be targeted in the disease. We knew the genetics behind this disease, and spinal muscular atrophy is the leading infant genetic cause of death. So we knew that there were patients in desperate need for upregulating this gene, and here we had the molecular delivery truck, this AAV9, that could deliver into the motor neurons. And we quickly constructed, but thoughtfully constructed, an ability to deliver this gene with all of the regulatory components for these cells that we would target the motor neurons to essentially become factories of their missing protein, that we had delivered the indeed genetic code that these cells would become factories and start producing the survival motor neuron gene that these patients were lacking.
So talk a little bit about this disorder. Talk a little bit about spinal muscular atrophy. This is something that infants about 6 months old usually are diagnosed about that age, and their parents right now are being told to go home and love them up because they probably won't live after age two.
Indeed, spinal muscular atrophy, all forms of the disease are serious and life-threatening. The most common form of spinal muscular atrophy is called SMA type 1. In medical textbooks, SMA type 1 is called Wernicke-Hoffmann disease. And this has also been phrased as floppy baby syndrome. And indeed, these babies are floppy. These babies don't have muscle tone. They can't lift their heads. They can't raise their arms to their mouth. They can't roll over. These children will never be able to crawl. They'll never be able to stand, walk, let alone roll over. And these patients indeed don't make it to their second birthdays. Over 90% of these kids will not make it past 20 months of age. Back in the day and in medical textbooks, there were no therapies there. And not too long ago, clinicians would essentially tell parents with an SMA type 1 baby that there was nothing that they could do. There was palliative care that they could do to make the child comfortable. And that these parents were sent home saying, "There's nothing we can do. Love your child. Enjoy your time. Your baby will die." And simply put, that is just not acceptable in our view, or in anyone's view, of a disease that no one would know that they are a carrier as a parent, or most people would not know that they're a carrier for spinal muscular atrophy. And it takes both the mother and the father to be carriers of the of the defect to essentially have then a 25% chance of having an SMA child. So no one would know this, and first-time parents would have a baby thinking that everything is fine, and then suddenly these babies show hypotonia or weakness. The babies don't hit certain milestones, and that's when the pediatrician sounds the alarm bells, and essentially neurologists will make the diagnosis of SMA type 1.
And this is just a single gene?
This is a single gene defect. It's a monogenetic disease.
Okay. And so you took a bold step to focus on this. Not all scientists are that bold.
We knew we had to do something for these patients and for these families who were ultimately given death sentences. And again, there were no drugs at the time, but others working in the field to develop drugs to upregulate SMN. And we had our molecular delivery truck, this AUV9, targeting these motor neurons that they could become factories to express the SMN protein. And we thought that if there was any place to go and be bold, it would be for these babies who had no hope. And that's where we started the studies and the preclinical studies to essentially test whether this idea, whether crossing the barriers could have an impact in the disease. And perhaps I'll just take a minute to describe to the listeners about spinal muscular atrophy and some of the preclinical models. Basically, a mouse model that was developed by Dr. Sentner and Dr. Burgess. Dr. Burgess was a colleague of mine at The Ohio State University. He had developed the mouse model of the disease that's utilized around the world. This mouse, it's called the Delta 7 mouse model, and it recapitulates many aspects of spinal muscular atrophy. The mice become weak, and these mice die at about 2 weeks of age. The median survival of a Delta 7 mouse is 15 plus or minus 1 day. So it's a great model of the disease and allowed researchers to essentially, in a short period of time, determine whether one was having a meaningful effect on the lifespan of these animals. And what we did was we brought these animals into our laboratory and utilized our molecular delivery truck that encoded the SMN gene and delivered into the bloodstream of these animals early in life, either at day one or day two of life. And essentially, we started passing the 14 days, then animals were surviving 30 days, and then we had some of the longest living animals reported in the world at the time, with animals surpassing 100 days of age, then 200 days, then even 300 days of age, where these mice were surviving. And they weren't just laying at the side of the cage. These animals were essentially following a one-time treatment of what's now become known as AVXS 101. These animals were running around the cage looking indistinguishable from a normal mouse.
Describe that moment when this was going on for you.
Well, remember I told you that there's a 25% chance of humans who are the mother and father are both carriers.
Right.
That same aspect is true in mice. So you have carrier mice, you breed them, and there's a 25% chance that you'll create an SMA Delta 7 mouse. And essentially, we use molecular tools to determine whether these animals are indeed the SMA mice, as they're enrolled in the mouse clinical studies, so to speak. So we actually thought, when we had these animals running around the cage over 100 days of age, that we had made a mistake. that we had actually, we were looking at just normal mice and not the SMA mice. And we actually went back to Dr. Burgess's laboratory and sent him some of the tails that he could do the test independent of us to reconfirm that indeed we had spinal muscular atrophy mice. Oh. We were pretty sure that we had them. But here we have the longest living animals where individuals within the field said, these mice can't be rescued. And here we had what looked to be rescued mice. And we sent the tails over to Dr. Burgess, and he independently tested them, and he said, Brian, these are SMA mice. And I remember it as this was back in 2008, 2009. He said, Brian, you have SMA mice. And I said, that's great, Arthur. And he's like, why did you send these to me? And I'm like, well, these are SMA mice that are about 70 days old at the moment. And Arthur hung up the phone, and probably within 15 or 20 minutes, he was in my laboratory looking at these animals, because this was just such an incredible, finding, and the excitement within the laboratory to say, you know, holy cow, we have something that works, and it's not just shifting the needle a little bit. It's really shifted the needle of increasing survival of these animals. That's when we knew we had something that could potentially be transformative in this disease.
Dr. Casper, we're going to take a quick break here that we need to. And when we come back, we'll talk about how then you've moved this research into clinical trials. And we'll be back in just a minute. Hang on the line. You're listening to Innovation. Welcome back to Innovation. I'm Kara Hetland, and joining me now, we're talking with Brian Casper. He's a chief scientific founder of, how do you say it?
AVEXIS.
AVEXIS. And you pronounce it how?
AVEXIS.
AVEXIS. And you're the scientific founder of AVEXIS, and one of the finalists for the $1 million Sanford Lorraine Cross Award that's being presented in December. A great time to come to South Dakota, I might add, is early December. Just kidding. So let's talk now. So you have found that this gene therapy works in mice, and now you need to take it to a clinical trial.
So we produced the gene therapeutic under conditions that would be suitable to move into human clinical trials, and this is called under good manufacturing practice facilities. And Nationwide Children's Hospital was one of the few institutions that had actually invested in, call it the clean room, to be able to produce products that could enter into phase one or phase 1-2 human clinical trials. And we worked with that team to produce some of the largest amounts of gene therapeutics that had ever been produced to go into human trials. And we partnered with a pioneering clinical physician named Dr. Jerry Mendell, who has 30 plus years of neuromuscular experience, including treating SMA patients. And Jerry and I and my team worked hand in hand to design the first in human clinical trial, to work through all of the regulatory requirements. And there's a vast number of regulatory requirements within hospitals, such as the institutional review boards. But we also had government regulatory bodies, the recombinant advisory committee, as along with the Food and Drug Administration. And we went through these processes and got the green light to start a first-in-human clinical trial with a potentially transformational product to treat the sickest patients with spinal muscular atrophy, and that is, again, those babies who get diagnosed typically around 6 months of age, and the ones that don't make it to their second birthdays. And this was really a bold move by the group as well as within the field on the aspect that this was the largest amount of virus that had ever went into a human being. And we know this field of gene therapy has not always had the cleanest bill of health, and there have been setbacks within the field, that really safety setbacks. So we had done many safety studies in multiple species. We felt confident that we had done all of our studies to ensure that this was worth taking forward. And we felt confident, but until you're in a human being and have tested the drug safety, one really doesn't have certainty. So we moved forward cautiously and started enrolling patients in the clinical trial. This was essentially a simple procedure. It was a one-time infusion of the product into the bloodstream of these babies. Now, the baby wasn't anesthetized. The babies were typically in the mother's or father's arms or taking a nap while, over the course of 1 hour, over 400 trillion of these gene therapeutics, or AAV9s, that encoded that SMN gene that these patients are missing, went into the bloodstream. And these babies had no reaction to the injection, which was great. And then we waited and we watched to see how these patients responded. Now, normal children in the development stage start moving their legs, start moving their arms, and start rolling over. And we started to see pretty early that these kids were starting to kick. The kids were bringing their arms to midline. The kids were starting to be able to use a pacifier and to take it out of their mouths. And those were early days, and I remember there was a sense of excitement, but there was a sense of caution in this, on the aspect that many drugs initially look promising and then eventually don't work. So we remained cautiously optimistic and continued to enroll patients into the clinical trial. And for this phase one clinical trial, there were a total of 15 patients. One was a minimally effective dose. That is the dose that the FDA said that we could initiate the clinical trials. This was a dose that in the mouse model of the disease took the animals from 14 days to about 30 days of age. That was the first three patients, or cohort one. And then we stepped up to the what we call the proposed therapeutic dose. This is a dose that rescues the lifespan of the Delta 7 mouse of animals living over 300 days. And 12 patients were enrolled in that cohort two of the study. Patients responded extremely well, and it was generally safe and well-tolerated. And then over time, we started seeing the patients, particularly in the cohort two or proposed therapeutic dosing group, that these patients started to achieve things that really had never been seen, and things that the textbooks would say the children should not ever be able to do. We had these tests called an infant test of motor function that was developed at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. This is a 16-battery test that are performed on infants to look at their motor function. This is testing things like whether the kids could raise their heads, whether they could raise their arms, could they roll over, could they sit unassisted. And essentially, the maximum score on this test is 64. There's 16 different tests, scores from 0 to 4. And we started to see within the first month that there was an 8 to 10 point increase in these scores. And not only was it month after month of increases, but then the children increased and stabilized and stayed there. So this suggested that these kids weren't deteriorating like the natural history or the textbooks would claim should happen in SMA. And indeed, then over time, these kids started doing things such as motor milestones of sitting unassisted, then crawling. Some of these kids have stood. So 4 out of these 12 children are standing without assistance. Some of these kids who were treated early basically do not have any signs of spinal muscular atrophy and are running up and down the hall. Again, these are things that clinicians had never seen throughout the history of this disease.
And this is happening without therapy, without teaching it? This is happening naturally.
This was happening naturally in these children that shouldn't be developing any motor milestones. Again, this was a one-time delivery. Some of our youngest patients out of the 15 was just less than 1 month of age at their diagnosis. The oldest patient was just under 9 months of age at enrollment. And what all of our studies preclinically had stated was get in as early as possible where this is a degenerative disease. Children lose motor neurons and you're born with the largest number of motor neurons that you'll ever have in your lifespan. Once you've lost a motor neuron, you're not getting that motor neuron back. We don't make any more of these cells. So we knew we needed to protect these motor neurons, deliver the life-saving SMN gene for these cells to become factories again to produce that missing protein. And essentially, it was our belief is if you got in there early enough, targeting enough of those motor neurons, that you could essentially make this disease not even exist.
And you're currently awaiting FDA approval? Or you have it?
So Avexis, the company that we founded, we had this fabulous results in all 15 of these children who were treated. And these kids, 100% of these kids, passed 20 months of age. And many of these kids are turning 5 years of age today and continue to prosper following the one-time treatment. What we saw back in the day was that we had a therapy, that we were doing things within this disease that, again, no one had ever seen of these children responding and doing what normal kids would be doing growing up. That we said we have a transformational therapy. We need to be able to develop this therapy to be able to deliver it to each and every child around the world that could respond to this effective transformational therapy. And that's really where the founding of Avexis came into play. Running clinical trials is extremely hard, but now thinking about how do we make a drug that could treat all 500 of the patients in the United States that are diagnosed with spinal muscular atrophy every single year. How do we start thinking about treating the prevalent population where there's over 20,000 patients that suffer from some form of spinal muscular atrophy? That we needed to scale and be able to make this biologic. And it's extremely complicated to make this. It's weeks to produce and purify this product. It's expensive to make this product. And there's certain technology and know-how that we needed to develop. So no one had scaled a gene therapeutic at the size that we knew we needed to get to be able to treat, again, not patients just in the U.S. or countries that can afford medicines, but also how do we get to the spot where we can treat every single child with this that could benefit around the globe. And nothing existed. We couldn't, the roadmap of being able to scale this and manufacture this, there was no road there. So essentially, we built up a team at Avaxis to be able to go and crack the code at being able to scale this and crack the code at being able to understand our product so that batch number one acts like batch number three, acts like batch number 103. And significant investments and talent came into the company to be able to get us to the position where we could supply the market and supply to patients who are desperate in need of a transformational therapy. And we have worked over the course of years with significant time and efforts by many, including myself, to be able to get this drug, hopefully, to the market. We've worked hand-in-hand with regulatory agencies throughout the globe, and I'll give just three examples. The FDA, which is the U.S. Our Food and Drug Administration, granted us breakthrough therapy designation. The European Medical Agency granted us PRIME designation, and Japan, where we applied, granted us the Sakigake designation. Essentially, what those means is that you get the regulatory agencies working hand in hand with the company to say, we believe that you have a transformational therapy. We will work together with you through complex regulatory aspects of drug development to be able to help you get this drug to market. And we have filed the very substantial packages of a phase three clinical trial that we've initiated with our commercial, global, scalable manufacturing process, along with all of the information that is required for a submission.